Bill stops on Friday, and I start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Friday's my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the NoVam Radio Network. It's about 7 past the hour. Aren't you glad it's Friday? Arg. We have I don't know. This feels like it's going to be a very, very weird program tonight. I guess it's because the stuff that I have here on hand to talk about. Before we go there yet, listen, if you've been on the fence about going on this Mexican cruise with us this October. I realize it's a million years from now. October, that's officially fall. Yeah, if you've been on the fence about this, going with Kathy and me and the kid, Molly, time's running out. We've got some, I just talked this afternoon to the booking agent that's handling all this at the travel agency in Phoenix. There's a few days left to book the cruise with these special Truth Seeker rates that they've arranged. And it does include all these onboard events like the meet and greet and the cocktail party. And I'm sure there's a couple of dances, a Q&A session, hopefully some poker. Maybe, who knows? We've never been on a cruise before, so this is all going to be new to us. Kathy and I are both going to try to lose about 10 pounds before we go so we can put it back on, because I understand that all you do on these things is eat. So, look, go to NovaMradio.com or Marsha Spring Travel, Marsha, M-A-R-S-H-A, SpringTravel.com. Go to NovaMradio.com and get on board today if you really want to do this, if you want to leave the country. And don't forget your passport. Jesus, God, you need a passport to go to Mexico and Canada. Well, no, I guess to get back in. Oh, my God. Ah. Anyway, go to NovaMradio.com. Come on, this is really going to be a blowout. I just have a feeling. If things get too out of hand, we can always hijack the boat and just head for New Zealand, right? And just make a new start, kind of like Lost or something. This would give everybody a chance to get away from the neocons for a week. You know you want to. So go to NovaMradio.com or MarshaSpringTravel.com. Marsha, as in John, Marsha. M-A-R-S-H-A, springtravel.com, and book today. We'd love to see you. I've gotten a lot of emails from people who are going, and it sounds like it's just going to be a hoot. But they wanted me to mention this again. There's still a few left. Snarf them up, will you please? Oh, and also tonight for Nova M founders, there's a couple thousand of you. I think you all ought to go at the same time to the chat room, to the NovaMradio.com chat room. Billy Foster, our CIO for NovaM Radio, hosts in there. I guess he's hosting tonight. And if everybody showed up, just go to their website, NovaMradio.com, log in, use your password, and let's get 2,000 people in that room tonight. Would that blow out the servers? Can you imagine 2,000 people doing that chat room thing where someone addresses something to you, and by the time you answer, 87 other messages are up there, and it's like, ah! At least that's the way it is for me. But I'm slow on the uptake. A couple of items here. You've heard about the Creationist Museum in Kentucky. Petersburg, Kentucky. Yeah, they have a whole museum there now. It just opened the other day. And it has depictions of Adam and Eve talking with dinosaurs and stuff. I mean, it's just unbelievable. A creationist theme park or museum or whatever. There is a video that plays at this Bible-based creationist museum. And The video is about Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and the guy that plays Adam, it turns out this guy has led kind of a different life outside the Garden of Eden as it's depicted in the, as it's depicted in the Creationist Museum. He's been online talking about his sexual exploits and modeling for a clothing line that promotes free love. After learning about his activities yesterday, the Creation Museum pulled the 40-second video in which this actor, Eric Linden, appears. He says, just because I'm Adam on the screen, that doesn't mean I'm Adam off the screen. Oh, my God. Isn't that just, this is like the Bush administration, right? These creationist museum things or never mind. Listen, I came to a conclusion today. I really did after watching, and I couldn't avoid it, this chaos around this poor Paris Hilton and Peter Pace going down and just on and on. You know what? You know what? The grand experiment is finished. It really, truly is. I'm talking about what Jefferson and Adams and Franklin and the rest of the people put together back in the mid to late 18th century. It's finished, True Seekers. I don't know what's going to come next. I hope it's a parliamentarian form of government. But I think it's pretty clear that the grand experiment is over. Now, it's not necessarily something to bemoan and feel bad about. I think probably a strong minority, if not plurality, of the signers of the Declaration of Independence would be surprised as hell to see that it's lasted 230-some years. Really, I'm not being cute with you here, or ironic, or snotty, or sarcastic, or whatever. I'm serious. I think it should be clear to all of us at this point that it's finished. We cannot continue this idea of a two-party system, or even a three-party, well, maybe three-party, but a two-party system with three separate but equal branches of government, unpoliticized, working for the good of the country. It's gone. It's completely gone. Now, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You know this. That's why I've been getting these emails of people who are just pulling their hair out by the roots. They don't know what the hell to do. You know, let's petition. Let's call. Let's demonstrate. Let's take to the streets. Maybe let's just let it die. It's not going to die a quiet death. This is going to be screaming death throes. This is going to be rugged, and it's going to be ugly. But maybe what will come out of it is a system of government that the rest of the civilized world seems to use quite well, and that's the parliamentary form of government. Did I say parliamentarian? I'm sorry. The parliamentary form of government, such as the Canadian model, the UK model, the Australian model, the New Zealand model, whatever. All the different... I realize I just named a bunch of English-speaking, predominantly white cultures, but... The parliamentary system is, I think, is about the only hope we've got left. When you get a monster, an incompetent freak, fool, drunk like George Bush at the helm of our system, you can't get him out. You can't get him out. If he murders somebody tomorrow, if he, you know, unzips his fly and urinates on the Constitution, you can't get him out. Because the true believers, the psychopaths who support this man, would never, I'm talking about in the Senate, would never vote for his impeachment. Never. So we've reached that point. Brick wall time. All the doors are closed, locked from the outside. We're standing in here going, what in the hell happened? Well, it's very simple. The framers always said it was only an experiment. They never said this is cast in concrete. It's not going to change. It will be here forever. They knew it was an attempt at self-government, unlike, up to that point, anything that had transpired in the systems of self-government, or the systems of government, I should say, in the history of humankind. There were some close parallels. You know, at one time when Rome was a republic, a little bit, but there was, you know, when the Greeks tried to, okay, maybe, certain Asian cultures and Middle Eastern cultures, Native American cultures, okay. But these white men who came here from mostly from the UK and put this thing together 2.5 centuries ago, they never promised that it was going to take root. They hoped that future generations would learn how to manage this incredible thing called self-government. They couldn't anticipate television or the internet or global entanglements or alliances that were based on fear. Some of them warned against it. They couldn't anticipate the kind of predatory, murderous capitalism that has engulfed the planet. So it's over, and this is going to be the operative mode inside my mind henceforth and here on. It's finished. The grand experiment is finished. And I think that maybe we ought to start seriously considering alternative forms of self-government.
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope, an ideology of hate.
Oh, yeah. 21 past the hour. I got somebody sent me a link to another website today that I think you ought to check out. It's a blog spot. It's redpill8.blogspot.com. Check it out, redpill8.blogspot.com. I didn't have time to go through the whole thing, but what I saw looked like it. It might be a very interesting site. You got it? Red Pill. You know what that's from. Red Pill, numeral 8, dot blogspot.com. Check it out if you don't mind. I mean, if you don't want to, screw it. But, you know, if you want to, check it out and tell me what you think. Could you do that? Okay. Red Pill, numeral 8, redpill8.blogspot.com. This is from Jimmy. A couple of emails here, and then I've got something I want to share with you about Paris Hilton. Jimmy writes, went drinking with a New Zealand pal last night, and he knew as much and complained as much about Bush as anyone. So I asked him, what, didn't they have scandals in New Zealand? And he thought for a moment, and then he said, well, yeah, the Prime Minister's limo was recently caught speeding. Mike, in my mind, revelations of horror have become so regular, they're like recurring natural events, like the sunrise or a flowing river, a cutoff for some needed funds, a bombed wedding party. It is bewildering how in New Zealand rivers don't flow and seasons don't change like in the U.S. And then talking to this Kiwi as we enumerated scandal after scandal and how exclusively American this horror was, it pounded me down. Boom, boom, boom. And soon my head was on the table shaking. No, no, no. I almost burst into tears. My friend likes Obama for president, and I then wondered how the hell Obama or anyone will be able to straighten out Bush's wildly tangled knot. Jimmy. Yeah, well, that's kind of, you know, I got this email let's see, what's, today's the 9th, isn't it, Kathy? Isn't today the 9th? It is. This is not the 8th. This is the 9th. What's the date? Kathy looks at the calendar. Boom, 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 boom. How many fingers is that? 8? Oh, it is 8. Okay. I got this email earlier this evening, and, you know, that's when I thought, you know, this is very ironic because I was just thinking about how our system really is finished. I mean, come on. Does anybody have the courage to be honest about it? It's over. This system that was handed to us by the founders. Surely you have no doubts. Here's one from Garrett. Also came in today, June 8th, but it came in early this morning, not too long after we went off the air. And he writes, Mike, hi, Mike. Millions upon millions are dying from preventable diseases and crimes against humanity, including those committed by the Bush regime. The mainstream media is a joke, a bad joke. Our public education system is a mess, with no child left behind, leaving even more kids behind than ever before. We still don't have universal health care. The divide between the haves and have-nots keep growing. Racism is still prevalent. The average American seems to have an attention span of about 20 seconds, unless the topic is celebrity gossip or reality television. I need a reason to be hopeful. I need a reason to believe things can change. I can't take the pain much longer. Garrett, Yeah, I hear you, Garrett. I hear you. It's just insane. It is insane. It's insane. Bridget sent this to me. It's a commentary on the Paris Hilton frenzy today, and she says, in case you didn't see it, and I didn't, it's an article at Salon.com on Paris Hilton. I cruising past the television a couple of times today, I kept seeing videos and apparently Paris Hilton was hauled back into court, and the judge said, get your ass back in jail, and she started screaming for her mommy. This is she's almost 30, right? In chronologically speaking, obviously Paris Hilton is a child. But and then what I saw on television was this horde of people, I didn't know what was going on, chasing a police car, an L.A. police car. Jesus, God! All that. And then I look closer, and they're photographers, news people, chasing this car to get a picture of Paris Hilton. Oh, God! What is wrong with you people? Not you, the listener. This scum, filthy, disgusting media we have. What the hell is going on? What has happened? Damn you people. It's on your backs, media, press, you scum. You're the only occupation that has First Amendment protection. You were written into the Constitution, you pigs. It wasn't plumbers that were written in the Constitution. It was people who worked in the press. Damn you! Damn you! Now, having gotten all that out, let's take a break, and I'll come back and tell you what they're saying at Salon.com. See, I told you it's going to be a weird night.
Brainwashed by the media, you're brainwashed by the press. Brainwashed by computer, brainwashed by mobile phones. Brainwashed by the satellite, brainwashed.
From the moment you the house in the morning, the terrorists or Democrats strike without warning. So to your back seat in bed, wear a bucket on your head. That's what I said. And to show your support for right-wing ideology, the raids on Iraq.
We take lives when we have to protect the people. That's how I look at it.
Oh, shut up, you freak. God, oh my God, this man is terminal cancer. It's just... Yeah, I am so angry at what media have become. All of television. Every last stinking chunk of it that is commercial television. All of it. Every bit. There's still a little bit left on public television. Bill Moyers still has a decent show. But American television is just the degenerate filth hole that it's become. There's nothing there, nothing except lies, distortions, an unending attempt to make you forget your own name. It's horrifying. As far as print medium is concerned, 80% of that is in the crapper too. We're in trouble. I mean, it's no question. We're in trouble. We have been abandoned. I realize that the blogosphere, cyberspace is alive with all the news you need to know. But damn it, we're not in front of a computer during the day to the extent that we can use it the way we used to use radio and television. A quick glance up, a quick tune into the radio in the car or headphones on the subway, whatever. It's gone. It's gone. We've been abandoned by this group of whores, no offense to sex workers, who have totally destroyed what the framers commissioned them to do, and they were so serious about it, they gave them First Amendment protection. Oh, you pigs. You dirty pigs. Every one of you. Now, the Paris Hilton thing today, I saw that on television today. How old is she, 30? A 30-year-old woman, so I've heard the reports, screaming for her mother. They kept cutting away from that to the verdict of the preacher's wife in somewhere who murdered her husband, involuntary manslaughter against her husband, probably because he was an evil son of a bitch who made her do awful things in the name of the Lord. And I'm watching this today. I'm thinking, but this that the article at Salon.com regarding the Paris Hilton frenzy is worth reading. Bridget sent me the link, and here's the end of the article. Paris has come to embody the angst of our increasing sense of powerlessness. She's the blonde whom we punish because we understand her crimes. We don't really understand all the crimes of this administration. Congressional bribes, organized mass deceit via domestic propaganda, policy fixing, violations of privacy and human rights. Those are too legally complicated. While we were busy oogling Lindsay's drug binges, Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction, and Britney's shaved head, our leaders larded us with misinformation, illegally invaded another country, murdered, we don't even have any idea how many innocent civilians, not to mention independent journalists, stole a nation's oil, tortured enemy prisoners, quietly bankrupted our economy and our international moral standing in service to the short con of military Keynesianism. Effectively built Dick Cheney his own Praetorian Guard and ushered in the most serious threat to American freedom in our history, the very real threat of despotism. God, that is depressing. If you put Paris in jail, you feel like you haven't been screwed by the man, said a friend of mine. If Paris goes to jail, there's still a middle class. There's still an illusion of hope. We're not the Philippines yet. There's still some kind of justice. And we're not all just effed. You can kick the blonde all you want, but kicking the wrong ass, while momentarily satisfying, really won't make life better. Yeah. Bush is drinking again, and that is important because, you know, up to this point, this man has been a dry drunk. All these rumors now I'm starting to hear or that have been out there about Pickles leaving him or putting some distance between him because he's a violent, vicious drunk apparently are true. I'm sure everyone has seen the pictures now. And I don't know. Maybe they're photoshopped. Maybe they're not true. I don't know. But there's Bush pouring a beer, drinking a beer with Angela Merkel and Tony Blair and somebody else. You can see it at Towel, T-O-W-L-E, or Toller Road, I don't know, T-O-W-L-E-R-O-A-D, T-O-W-L-E-R-O-A-D. What is that? Towel, I don't, .com. Anyway, there are the pictures. They're there. And this was taken the other day. And then, just coincidentally, the Bush fell ill this morning. That's what they say. Bush has fallen ill in Germany while attending a summit of the leading industrialized nations. The White House correspondent for Voice of America reports Bush skipped the morning session of G8 leaders because he woke up with an upset stomach. If you look at these pictures, he woke up with a King Hell hangover. This drunk thug, there he is. Unless the pictures have been photoshopped. I don't know anymore. Who in the hell knows what is real anymore? You know what I'm saying? It's real because I say it's real. I'm late. I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late. I'm late. I'm late. White House counselor Dan Bartlett says the president's military doctor does not know whether it is a stomach virus or something Mr. Bush ate or drank. The counselor says it, not the doctor. You see, give the doctor some cover. The doctor's in there trying to pump this sorry bastard full of, coffee and tomato juice to get him over the hangover. It says here the president was dressed and ready for a meeting with French President Sarkozy when he asked the French leader to move those talks to his hotel room. Bartlett says they had a good discussion despite the president's sickness. Bartlett says the president has sent his regrets to summit host Angela Merkel and hopes to rejoin the G8 schedule later in the day after resting. Blah, 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 blah. And there are the pictures all over the internet. You can check them out. I'm sure you've seen them. If he's not pouring a beer, if he's not tipping back a glass, then photoshopping is better than I ever thought it would ever get. But what the hell do I know? Oh, man. The spectacle. And none of these, the Paris Hilton spectacle, none of these multi-million dollar per year paid network anchors like Brian Williams or, who's the guy on ABC? Gathy, you know who he is. Huh? None of these multi-million dollar paid anchors can claim the high road because... I watched ABC News tonight, and there it was. It was on last night. They have 22 minutes to give you the headlines. Charlie Gibson, that's what I'm trying to think of. They have 22 minutes to give you the headlines. Gibson's ABC newscast, every night they say, okay, our next story is a look in-depth, and they give it 3 minutes. That's what in-depth means on a network newscast. It's only on for 30 minutes, and they make a lot of money in that 30 minutes, and then they've got to get out of the way because the affiliates, the way the affiliates make their money in television is through, you know, the sale of their local advertising and national advertising. But as far as the economics of television of stations and networks, I frankly don't give a damn. It's all a ripoff. It's just a total hosing. This is what the American people are getting. Junk. Just miles of junk. Now, I'm not here to tell you something tonight you don't know. But, Truth Seeker, dear heart, the system is broken. I said this a couple of months ago. I'm sick of signing petitions, whether they're online or not online. I'm sick of calling my senator or my representative. Well, I don't call any of my senators because they're Nazis. I live in Georgia. My representative, I don't even know anymore. It's over. The system is irreparably broken. It's finished. Now, the thing to do is what? We're at a crossroads here or a fork in the road. Go this way and we get into whatever you want to call it. Totalitarianism, despotism, Nazism, fascism, corporatism. Well, pick a word. They're all interchangeable. You take the other part of the fork and go toward a parliamentary form of government where when these rat bastards start to do what the Bush crime family has been doing for 6.5 years, they can be thrown out. I understand now. I do. Why Reid and Pelosi won't do anything about impeachment? Because they can't. Forget it. My God, everybody, stop. He's not going to be impeached, no matter what he does, because the system will not allow it any longer. Do you not understand this? I didn't until this realization this afternoon. It's not because Reid and Pelosi are betraying the people who put them in office or positions of power. It's because the system no longer is capable of responding to this sort of stuff the way the Constitution demands. It's over. Do you understand? For God's sake, can we not face it and move down the fork that's going to get us out of this? Or not?
And now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
And I don't even drive, no, no.
It's about 10 before the hour. Okay, there may be some hope. And again, as far as the news are concerned, and again, this is online. Daryl in Birmingham just sent me the link. You guys probably already know all about it. Wait a second. Let me get rid of this I am. I don't know who in the hell keeps I am-ing me, but whoever it is, please stop. It is therealnews.com. Therealnews.com. No advertising, no government funding, no corporate dollars, no profit, no strings. Therealnews.com. Check it out. I just went there. It looks really, really good. And thanks to Daryl in Birmingham who sent me that sent me the link. Check it out, therealnews.com. And there are other sites, Daryl, that apparently not as hip as this one, not as well put together. Hip? Not as well put together and as professional looking as this one. The point I was trying to make, it is difficult for people to discipline themselves to go get the news at a certain time every day. Our habit has been, because this is, they have fed us this junk, they have put this needle into our vein for 40 years now of conditioning us when to listen, which is all day long. You know, it's got to be background noise. It's only been recently, God help me, it's only been recent, I guess because of Molly. Molly's old enough now that we don't have CNN or MSNBC or something running in the background all day at the house, just so we get a feel for what's going on, we being Kathy and me. We had to stop because what I noticed when I do turn on the news, when I do turn on the network report or CNN, there's an explosion, there's screaming. Molly, who's not quite three, her head spins around like something out of The Exorcist, and she just stares at the screen, utterly transfixed. And I'm standing there going, oh, no, click, we're out of here. But I feel absolutely betrayed by media in this country, especially by television and radio, just utterly, absolutely betrayed. Why aren't they reporting this parade? Why isn't there an unending drumbeat about these Justice Department witnesses who for months now have claimed they don't know anything about how the prosecutors were chosen for firing? And as the Times points out today in their lead editorial, this week it was the turn of Bradley Schlossman, a former federal attorney in Missouri. It was his turn to sit there and say, I know nothing. I don't know anything. As the Times says, it's time for Senator Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, to deliver subpoenas for Karl Rove, Harriet Myers, and their top aides to make these bastards testify in public and under oath. Now, this guy Schlossman was appointed U.S. Attorney in Missouri while the state was in the midst of a hard-fought Senate race. In his brief stint, he pushed a lawsuit, which was thrown out by a federal judge. Get that. A U.S. attorney pushes a lawsuit that was thrown out by a federal judge that could have led to thousands of Democratic-leaning voters being wrongly purged from the rolls. Does nobody care except Greg Palast? And Brad Friedman, what the hell has been going on here? I mean anybody in media. I know you care, so do I. Just days before the election, this pig Schlossman indicted voter registration workers from the group Acorn, a liberal group, on fraud charges. Schlossman said it didn't occur to him that the indictments could affect the campaign. Now, that which is a lie. Every one of these rat bastards have sat there and committed perjury, and the Judiciary Committee has charged none of them with perjury. That's perjury, because the Justice Department's own guidelines tell prosecutors not to bring vote fraud investigations right before an election. And this pig, Schlossman, sits there and says, oh, I don't know. He also claimed that he didn't know that Acorn was a liberal-leaning group. Perjury after perjury. See, this is why I say, any of you who are still out there, and I was among your number up until, 3 o'clock this afternoon, who are still hoping for impeachment of this. You know what the best thing could happen? One of the best things, Cheney has to go in and have surgery and have his pacemaker removed sometime this summer. The Times says Congress has now heard from everyone in the Justice Department who appears to have played a significant role in the firings of the prosecutors. They've all insisted that the actual decisions about whom to fire came from somewhere else. Is it not clear that the somewhere else is Dick Cheney and Karl Rove? Times didn't write that. I just screamed it. They did write this. If Congress is going to get to the bottom of the scandal, it has to get the testimony of Rove, his aide Scott Jennings, and Sarah Taylor, Harriet Myers, and her deputy William Kelly. But they'll fire him first. Look what happened to Peter Pace today. Of course, nobody deserved to be cashiered more than this disgrace to the United States Marine Corps. He's like Oliver North. Why do you think they decided to let Pace go? Because a reconfirmation hearing for this thug would have required questions under oath. And the Bush crime family will have none of that. None of it. It's time to move on. It's time to honor the founders and say, you guys were right. It didn't last. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. All right, let's squeeze in a phone call or two here. Let's start with Jeff. Jeff is calling from San Diego. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
What's up?
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. My first time calling into your show.
Well, welcome aboard.
I wanted to comment on those pictures on Bush and the beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently that's non-alcoholic beer.
Yes. Somebody sent me an email, said that Keith Olbermann had the camera zoom in on it.
Right, yeah.
And it's something, but we don't know what's in the bottle.
Well, that's true too. And I also wanted to make another comment.
Sure.
You were wanting to get Karl Rove and Harriet Myers on the stand under oath.
Yeah.
What's to prevent them from doing what Alberto Gonzalez did and just said, I don't know, 100 times?
Well, actually, nothing. But that would mean then, and I think the whole world knows this, not the whole world, but those of us who give a damn, if Rove and Myers were to say, we don't know, then there's only two people left.
Okay, and then what if they say, I don't know?
Well, Bush and Cheney would never, ever honor a subpoena and go before Congress. They would claim separation of powers, even though they're doing everything they can to eliminate the legislative branch as a functioning branch of government. So
right.
that's where it stops. But then I think all of us who care about this sort of stuff, and I guess there are a few of us left, would then understand clearly that the firings were orchestrated by Bush and Cheney in order to demolish, for once and for all, even the appearance of a democratic system of self-government. And then it would be, I think, entirely clear that Bush and Cheney were totalitarians who
in fact, since their plot was foiled, probably will not acquiesce to an election in 2008. And then it would be time, if there's any guts left or backbone left in this country, to get into the streets and do whatever it takes to restore democracy. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm all for that, but I mean, I just don't know if the American people have the will left.
You don't know if the American people have what?
The willpower, actually give a damn. I mean, I talk to people all the time, and or maybe I'm just talking to the wrong ones, but they just don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I talk, every once in a while I'll talk to somebody and ask them, do you even know who your congressperson is? And they said, no. I mean, do you care what's going on in Washington? No.
Yeah. Are you at work?
Yeah.
Are you?
I am. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on a break.
Okay. Well, listen, Jeff, I'm glad you phoned in. This is your first time calling in. How do you listen to us? You listen to us on what's?
KLSD, San Diego.
Oh, KL. That's right. You're in San Diego. Well, I'm glad you found the program. I hope you're going to be a regular and do.
Oh, I'm always a regular. You're my favorite. I mean, I make sure I listen to you.
Okay. Well, I mean caller.
Okay.
All right. Call in again sometime. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you checking in. Now, before we go back to your calls, a couple more things here. Senator Charles Schumer, who has led the investigation into the firing of those attorneys, he announced today that they're going to take a vote of no confidence in the Senate Monday on Attorney General and torture boy Alberto Gonzalez. Schumer said, quote, if all senators who have actually lost confidence in Attorney General Gonzalez voted their conscience, the vote would be unanimous, end quote. Schumer added that he expects the president to pressure members of his party to vote against the measure. Schumer said, we will soon see where people's loyalties lie. That's a bit naive, isn't it, Chuck? Come on. You know where people's loyalties lie, my God. But go ahead, carry on. Vote of no confidence, good. Do you think that'll move Bush? No, it won't. But it's good to get it on the record, Chuck. Go ahead, do it. Following the announcement, White House Deputy Press Secretary Tony Fratto sent a sharply worded message to The Hill, which is the newspaper that reported this. Fratto said, quote, if Senator Schumer had a conscience, now listen to this, see, if Senator Schumer had a conscience, he would end his political vaudeville act and let the Senate get back to work on important legislation. These games are a discredit to the Senate, end quote. This is the kind of stuff that makes me want to open a vein. And I don't mean one of mine. Oh, hell no. But, to make a statement like that, the most incompetent, criminal, corrupt, filthy administration in this country's history, and this little piglet, Tony Fratto, says it's time to end Schumer's vaudeville act. Oh, my God. In the first place, Tony, you dumb freak, do you know how many people out there don't have a clue what the word vaudeville means? Oh, well. Peter Pace is being replaced as chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Mm-hmm. He's going to be succeeded by a Navy guy, the chief of naval operations, Admiral Michael Mullen. Gates said that renominating Pace would be an intolerable, quote, divisive ordeal, end quote, for the military and the general himself. No, it wouldn't, Gates. It would be an eye-opener for the American public when Pace had to sit there in front of a Senate committee, the Senate Armed Service Committee, questioning him about his reconfirmation. The questions would concern the invasion and occupation of Iraq. And the Bush crime family wants nothing out there. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Pace wanted a second term as chairman. But he's been fired. He's been fired. Not that that's a bad thing. John Saltz, writing at HuffingtonPost.com, says the following. General Peter Pace was let go today as chairman of the Joint Chiefs. That's a good thing. But the administration has tolerated his poor performance for too long and dismissed him, fearing his anticipated reconfirmation hearing would be ugly. If the administration was hoping to avoid answering the tough questions by avoiding a reconfirmation hearing for Pace, they can forget it. General Pace grossly overstepped his bounds and poorly represented the military with his political actions and misguided statements. The straw that broke the camel's back for us was his defense of a convicted felon, Scooter Libby, when it was entirely improper for him to do so as a top leader in the military who is supposed to remain nonpartisan. General Pace has made a number of other missteps that reflected poorly on the military as of late. For example, on Memorial Day, Pace seemed to defend the president's failed policy by deliberately fudging American death numbers from Iraq to sound not as high as they really are. On March 11th, Pace chose to publicly air his personal views on homosexuality, calling it immoral and saying that was justification for the military's don't ask, don't tell policy on gays openly serving. In today's press conference announcing the move, Secretary of Defense Gates maintained that one of the reasons for letting Pace go was to avoid a contentious reconfirmation hearing. They won't avoid the tough questions if VoteVets.org has anything to do with it. The president has to and will be held accountable. It doesn't matter how many people they let go. Congress has a job to do, and we expect that they will do it. We'll be there to be sure they do. John Saltz, of course, is part of VoteVets.org. So the questions can be directed at the admiral. And what do you want to bet? The admiral is going to say, well, I don't know, Senator. You know, I haven't been following the story. I haven't been briefed on what's going on in Iraq. I'm not up to speed, Senator, on what needs to be done. I'm sorry, Senator, I was just nominated. Gee, Senator, I really can't answer that question, but I'll get back to you. I don't know, Senator, but my aides will check that out. Well, so much for omerta. In the Bush crime family, it's enforced. In the mafia, it's done voluntarily. You know, the vow of silence. What a bunch of pigs.
I need a break beat. Yo, another one bites the dust. She said she loved me. She was a spy who lied. Another one bites the dust. Right. I could relate. Could you relate? Another one bites the dust. Jerry Wonder, Prada. Another one bites the dust. Yo, Cannabis and John Forte. Another one bites the dust. Yeah, Dirty Cash and Baby Free. Another one bites the dust. And another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. Not now, baby. Baby, sir. Another one bites the dust.
Dollar bills, you only got 10.
Teacher, teach me to read because I have learning problems.
Is this like a huge distillery?
It's about 22 past the hour. All right, we're going to come to your calls in a second here, but another email. This is from Reese.
He writes, I agree, the news is gone. It's not easy for some people to admit to themselves, but it really hits home when we have a game show on ABC about bingo. Bingo, for Christ's sake. When it comes to news, I have pretty much thrown away my TV. I cannot trust television to bring me my daily news. You, Randy, and Dig.com have become my news. I know you and Randy don't like to consider yourselves credible news sources, but I do. I've been thinking about calling, but every time I think about what I would say on the air, I wind up taking myself to a place where I would sound like some kind of revolutionary screaming that it's time for action to rise up and do things that would go against anything sounding like a nonviolent approach. There's really no one that will end this insanity. No politician that cares has enough clout. No wealthy exec or media star, movie or rock, wants to leave their life of luxury and give all their money to groups that will lobby in our favor or pursue any kind of legal action to strike any kind of blow against the evil media empire, and the other countries just don't care or are probably too afraid of getting blown up. It's all up to us now. Our numbers are growing. We're becoming more aware of what's going on, thanks to you and the rest. I do have a suggestion for your listeners regarding the internet news. There's always a neighbor that has internet access. Go to the library, go to the internet cafes, and go to dig.com's world and business section. That's D-I-G-G, of course. People are locating news articles from trustworthy sources every day that television news refuses to run. Get your neighbors to help out. Share the news. Granted, not all of us are in front of our computers all day, but some of us can take a few minutes to get the more relevant info and pass it on to our neighbors. Folks, become a local news network. You and I are all that's left to help provide the rest with what's going on beyond our towns. The television has grown up and now looks down on us like a retarded stepchild. The only way for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. Reese. Okay. Good ideas there. I saw this today and started salivating. Vice President Dick Cheney's routine checkup on Friday revealed no new blockages in his heart, but doctors said he needs a new battery for a special pacemaker he has in his chest. The battery in his implanted cardiac defibrillator is reaching its limit, said Megan McGinn, Deputy Press Secretary for the Vice President. She said doctors must replace the entire device to replace the battery, and that the surgery will be scheduled this summer at a convenient time for the Vice President. Oh, please, Dick, wait one day past the time when the battery is due to stop. Cheney underwent his annual physical, which included a stress test. Doctors also checked out his cardiac defibrillator, which was implanted in June of 2001 to shock his heart if an irregular heartbeat develops. A stress test, quote, showed no evidence of new coronary blockage, McGinn said. She added that doctors said his defibrillator was functioning properly and they had not had to treat any irregular beating of the Vice President's heart. Cheney resumed his normal schedule after the checkup. Doctors did not address the clot Cheney has in his leg.
What is everyone going to wake up to the fact that his body parts don't want to be there? That his heart, his leg, his foot, they don't want him. The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
about 25 past the hour. This is the 40th anniversary, by the way, of the attack on the USS Liberty. Are any of you aware of what that was? 40 years ago, the U.S. spy ship, USS Liberty, sailed into the Mediterranean Sea. And on June 8, 1967, during the Six-Day War, Israel's Six-Day War against Egypt, Jordan, and Syria, the Liberty was cruising off the Sinai Peninsula. Ron Martz, who writes for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, picks it up. The seas were calm that day, the sky cloudless cobalt blue. Then, without warning, the Liberty was strafed, rocketed, napalmed, and torpedoed, killing 34 and wounding 171 members of the 295-member crew. At first, Mo Schaefer, one of the sailors on the USS Liberty, and the other sailors thought the attackers were Egyptian. But they soon realized that their lightly armed vessel, in fact, had been attacked by Israel, an American ally. The U.S. Navy and the Israelis concluded, after a quick investigation, that the attack was an accident, a case of mistaken identity caused by the fog of war. But surviving crew members of the Liberty have long disputed that the attack was an accident. Many of those crew members will gather in Washington this weekend for their annual convention to remember their comrades and replay the events from 4 decades ago. As they age, their resolve to get a full accounting for that day has only strengthened. Mo Schaefer, who's now 60 and lives in Marietta, Georgia, said, quote, "I have a responsibility to my crew to do everything I can to get to the truth," end quote. Some crew members believe the ship was deliberately attacked because Israel was about to launch its assault on the Golan Heights and did not want the outside world to know its intentions. It is an area that is still in dispute today and the source of continuing tension. Others believe the Israelis tried to make it appear that Egyptians had attacked so the United States would retaliate against what then was a Soviet client state. Answers have been hard to come by. That's because the U.S. government needs Israel as an ally in the Middle East and did not want to hold it accountable, some crew members say. The basic facts of what happened that day are not in dispute. For the survivors, what remains unanswered is why it happened and why there hasn't been a more thorough investigation. Navy officials in Washington said this week there are no plans to reopen the investigation. In a response to questions about the Liberty, the Navy Office of Information sent out an unsigned statement that reads in part, quote, "A Navy court of inquiry investigated the facts and circumstances concerning the attack on the USS Liberty soon after the event in 1967. Admiral McCain," who, by the way, is the father of current Senator John McCain, "Admiral McCain found that the Liberty suffered an unprovoked attack by Israeli air and naval forces in international waters. The Secretary of State communicated to the government of Israel, quote, the attack must be condemned as an act of military irresponsibility reflecting reckless disregard for human life," end quote. The government of Israel formally communicated its sincere expression of deep regret and subsequently paid U.S. claims in full for the deaths, injuries, and damages caused in the attack, thus closing the matter between the two governments, end of statement. There's no question, Ron Martz writes, that Liberty was a spy ship sent to the Mediterranean to intercept radio signals, said 62-year-old Palm Coast, Florida resident Ernie Gallo, a communications technician from the Liberty. He says, Gallo is now vice president of the Liberty Veterans Association, said in a telephone interview, quote, "The area where the communications technicians worked in was sealed off from the rest of the crew. We were in somewhat of a vault. We never talked to the rest of the crew about what we did," end quote. Gallo, who later went on to a 28-year career in the CIA, said the Liberty was cruising in a figure-eight pattern 13 miles off Port Said, Egypt, on the day of the attack. The ship was flying a large American flag, crew members recalled, and could not have been misidentified as Egyptian. Reconnaissance aircraft with the Israeli markings made at least 12 flights over the ship that morning, Gallo said. He said, quote, "We waved to the pilot, and he would wave back. We felt very comfortable the Israelis knew we were on their radar," end quote. Many members of the crew were sunbathing on deck.
About 2 p.m., two unmarked aircraft flew toward the ship and unleashed a barrage of cannon and rocket fire. The Liberty was able to get out only one distress call to 6th Fleet warships before its communications antennae were destroyed. After the jets were finished, clearly marked Israeli torpedo boats began swarming around the damaged ship, survivors recalled. 5 torpedoes were launched, 4 missed. The other struck the Liberty on the right side, crippling it and leaving it dead in the water, according to survivors and the findings of the inquiry. The torpedo explosion killed 25 of those who died. Mo Schaefer, a communications technician who was near the blast, was thrown headfirst into the ceiling. Crew members say the attack lasted more than 2.5 hours. Gary Brummett, now 60, of Grand Cove, Louisiana, a repairman in the ship's boiler section, said, quote, "I think they stopped firing at us only because they ran out of ammunition," end quote. Crew members said they later counted 821 large holes in the Liberty. Gallo said, quote, "Their whole intent was to sink that ship because we were a perceived threat to their war plans," end quote. Crew members say that the court of inquiry held shortly afterward on Malta, where the crippled vessel was towed, was little more than a political show. Brummett, the president of the Liberty Veterans Association, said, quote, "The initial naval court of inquiry was a sham. They took the word of the attackers over the word of the Liberty survivors," end quote. Survivors say they were warned by Navy officials not to speak publicly about what happened that day, and many did not for at least 15 years until the group's first reunion in 1982. Since then, they have pushed to reopen the investigation or get a new one. Over the years, some senior military officials have backed the calls for a new investigation, including retired Admiral Thomas Moorer, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and Marine General Ray Davis of Stockbridge, Georgia, who was awarded the Medal of Honor for heroism in the Korean War. Retired Navy Captain Ward Boston, the chief counsel for the original Court of Inquiry, broke his silence on the issue with a 2004 affidavit that said he and the presiding admiral believed the attack, quote, was a deliberate effort to sink an American ship and murder its entire crew, end quote. Captain Boston also said in the affidavit that the official version of the inquiry, which included the attack was a mistake, quote, is not the same one that I certified and sent to Washington, end quote. As more information continues to leak out, the incident becomes more frustrating for the survivors. Mo Schaefer says, quote, "We shouldn't be sitting here 40 years later dealing with this. It should have been settled in 1967 or 1968. End quote. There was a book written about it called The Attack on the Liberty. It was written by, I think, a former member of Congress. I think, from the upper Midwest. I think. It's so long ago. And the truth has never, ever, ever, ever come out. And never will. Forget about it. Forget about it, as Mo Schaefer might say. All right, let's do some phone calls. I decided to bring that up because it is the 40th anniversary of that attack, and nobody ever talks about the attack on the USS Liberty. Nobody. And when I saw that Ron Martz of the Journal Constitution had written this today, I thought, well, you know, he's such a credible source. Ron Martz was the military correspondent for the Atlanta Journal Constitution for years. Martz went over during the first Gulf War, the one initiated by George Herbert Walker Bush, and reported. He was not an embedded journalist. He went over to report as a war correspondent for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution years and years and years and years ago. I used to have Martz on every once in a while when I worked at WSB as a guest. He must have retired by now. He must be a special correspondent to the Journal-Constitution, or maybe not. Maybe he's still active on the roster. But Ron Martz is an excellent writer, very truthful. As far as I know, not a liberal, not a conservative. He's a journalist, and you can't tell from his writings. So,
All right, quick break. We'll be back, and back to your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. And by the way, if you want a more comprehensive and current report on the attack on the Liberty from a 40-year removed historical perspective, go to counterpunch.org right now, counterpunch.org, and read Jeffrey St. Clair's lengthy piece, Israel's Attack on the USS Liberty Revisited. It's much too long to share with you on the air, whereas Ron Martz's piece today in the Journal Constitution was just about the right length. But go to counterpunch.org. And check it out. And thanks to KL for sending me the link. Counterpunch.org. Jeffrey St. Clair's piece will pop up. It's something that you should know, that's why. All right, back to your phone calls. At 9 before the hour, Robert is calling from Daly City, California. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Mike. There's more to that story, I think. You know, you might wonder why the Sixth Fleet didn't launch to defend the Liberty. Apparently, Johnson had called McCain and told him not to intervene. He wanted that GD ship at the bottom of the Mediterranean.
Well, there was something else, too, and Jeffrey St. Clair brings this up in his article today. Apparently, the Navy did scramble a couple of jets that were on their way to see what the hell was going on, but these Navy jets were carrying nuclear weapons. Nuclear missiles. And when and word went to McNamara, and McNamara ordered the boats or the ships back, and it went down the chain of command to the admiral you're talking about, and he did say, "Get those GD planes back on this deck." So,
what I heard was that what I had read or heard was that there was nuclear armed. Aircraft, a Marine was guarding it coming up from the elevators in the hold, and they were ordered not to launch. And apparently, it was a 6-day war. They were going to threaten the Arabs and bomb Cairo. But, 40 years, and they tried to cover it all up. But apparently, the commander of the Liberty received behind closed doors a Congressional Medal of Honor for keeping his mouth shut.
I don't know about that.
There's a lot. I mean, it's like a blind people trying to describe an elephant, you know, and they all grab a different part of the elephant. I mean, sure. and this is all in secret, and we're trying to do the best we can, you know.
Yeah.
But I had been wondering about this Scooter Libby thing, you know, because when Ken Lay right between his conviction and his sentencing, Ken Lay went underground, and all his past sins were wiped out. So here we are with Scooter Libby right between conviction and sentencing.
Do you think he's going to have a heart attack?
Well, hey, you know, Jeb Bush, this guy Bush, he has the chutzpah. Cheney could have to retire or go underground too this summer, possibly. And he just picked Jeb Bush to be vice president. I mean, you know he would do it.
Oh, God.
You know he would. And you think things are bad now.
No, he wouldn't. Look, it's my understanding, and don't ask me how I know this. Somebody told me this who I think has an inside track in Florida, to Florida government when Jeb Bush was the governor. And that is, there is absolutely no love lost between Jeb Bush and George Bush. Jeb was supposed to be the president of the United States, not George. But Jeb, believe it or not, Jeb is the brother that is the least tainted by theft and fraud and scandal. All of these Bush boys are thugs and thieves.
That's not saying much, Mike.
Well, I know it's not. But Jeb was supposed to be the designated son, and George, this drunk, drug using frat boy, somehow muscled his way in. So it's my understanding that when these two get together, there's some GDs and MFs that fly through the air that certainly don't cast a good light on their Christianity.
I think mom and dad will stroke Jeb a little bit and say, now, come on now, stop your fighting and get him in the back door. I just don't think we've seen the end of the Bushes yet. I mean, this guy, I mean, if you can see George Herbert Walker on the Texas School Book Depository steps in Dealey Plaza at the moment Jack Kennedy's killed, and then he becomes head of the CIA right when the House Select Committee on Assassinations is saying, well, it was a conspiracy, but it's been so long we can't know, and then he becomes...
Yeah.
Then Reagan takes a bullet, and a close family friend winds up being the one that shot Reagan and Bush's vice president. I mean, these guys, I mean, he's head of Carlisle, and Bindar Bush is making a fortune trading weapons in the black market. I mean, these guys are, they're Tony Soprano. I mean, that's who they really, truly are.
Without the charm.
They're much bigger. They're much bigger and lustrous.
Hey, Robert, you're calling from Daly City, California. How do you listen to the program?
I listen on the Quake 960.
Oh, I thought Daly City, for some reason, I thought it was in the southern part of the state.
No, it's just south of San Francisco.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry for not understanding the geography completely.
Have you heard of John Hagland, the Natural Law Party?
The Natural Law Party I've heard of, but I don't know the person you just mentioned.
Well, John Hagland, he tried to take over the Reform Party from Perot, but Buchanan basically stole it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was back when, in the early 90s.
2000. He wanted to get on the platform with...
Oh, 2000. Oh, okay.
And he wanted to get on the platform with Gore and Bush and give people an alternative perspective. What we're lacking in this country is really an alternative vision in Proverbs that talks about where there is no vision, the people perish. There is an alternative vision, but these guys, they rig the game, and they want their own paradigm, their own pharmaceutical petrochemical paradigm. We're all sucked, hooked into this oil paradigm, and we've got to break out of it.
I hear you. Robert, we got to go. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll talk again. And you and I will talk again, Truth Seekers, right after this break. Oh, that sounded so phony, didn't it? Sound like some cheesy first-year talk show host. Stay tuned is what I meant to say. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Back 6:30 past the hour. Hey, listen, once again, if you guys have been on the fence about cruising with Kathy, me, and Molly to the Mexican Riviera this October, come on, time is running out. I'm not sure the exact number, but we still have a few openings left. And we really want to just cram this all the way to the top. This is going to be fun, and we want you to come along, okay? Some of you have cruised before, some of you haven't. We haven't either, not this kind of cruising. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There's a few days left. When is it? June 1st? It has to be done by June 1st?
Well, June 1st was a while back, Mike. That's all right. I know it's during the week next week, Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, somewhere in there. And then, you could still book the trip, but you wouldn't get these rates, and you wouldn't have the wonderful, glorious advantage of hooking up with us on the ship and doing all the little events that are just planned specifically for people who are signing up for the cruise.
I knew June 1st was behind us. I knew that. Honest to God, I knew that. Anyway, come on, do this with us. We're looking forward to meeting you, those of you who want to go along. There's some onboard events that are being planned. I don't know who the hell is planning them, but we're going to be there. Meet and greets, cocktail party, maybe a poker game or two, Q&A session, all sorts of fun and frivolities. So here's what you do. Go to NovaMradio.com or MarshaSpringTravel.com. Marsha is spelled M-A-R-S-H-A, MarshaSpringTravel.com or NovaMradio.com. And book today if you want to get the special rate. Huh? What?
I mean, wouldn't it just be cool to pack a ship with liberals? I mean, think about it. When's the last time you've been in one place where you've had, like...
Well, we're not going to have the whole ship.
No, but, I mean, think about it. Well, of course not. But think about it, 30, 40, 50 like-minded people in the... You know? I mean, don't you always feel like, you know...
I'm all by myself.
You're at a party and you don't know what to say.
Well, this is what they do on the Nation cruises all the time. For 15, 20 years, I subscribe to the Nation. I get a copy of the Nation. They're advertising another cruise. And I was saying, gosh, I'd like to go on that, but could never get around to it. So now we're going to do one.
Plus, everybody out there, and I mean everybody in totality, like all of humanity, needs to meet our daughter. Molly is something to behold. She is a living joy, and if you haven't met Molly, you're really missing out.
Oh my God, you sound like a mother.
I'm totally in love with our little girl, but she's really special.
She's very sweet. All right, so come on along. We'd love to have you come on this trip. If you can do it, do it. I got an email here from DP that I've got to share with you. I'm laughing because it's so utterly all-inclusive, and I certainly agree with what DP has written. The subject line is, "The fat lady has sung." Nor, finally, is it in any way a theory, he writes, or she writes. I'm sorry, DP, I don't know if you're a man or a woman. Nor finally, is it in any way a theory that the one single name that can be directly linked to the Third Reich, the U.S. military-industrial complex, Skull and Bones, Eastern Establishment, Good Old Boys, the Illuminati, Big Texas Oil, the Bay of Pigs, the Miami Cubans, the Mafia, the FBI, the JFK assassination, the New World Order, Watergate, the Republican National Committee, Eastern European Fascists, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the United Nations, CIA headquarters, the October Surprise, the Iran-Contra scandal, INSLAW, the Christic Institute, Manuel Noriega, drug-running freedom fighters and death squads, Iraqgate, Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction, the blood of innocence, the savings and loan crash, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, the Octopus, the Enterprise, the Afghan Mujahideen, the War on Drugs, MENA, Arkansas, Whitewater, Sun Myung Moon, the Carlyle Group, Osama bin Laden, and the Saudi royal family, David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, and the presidency and vice president of the United States is George Herbert Walker Bush. George Herbert Walker Bush, son of Prescott Bush, a banker who aided Hitler, said, quote, "If the people knew what we had done, they would chase us down the street and lynch us," end quote. No, they won't, DP writes. Not until they are starving, and then it will be too late. If the people knew what we had done, they would chase us down the street and lynch us. Bill Clinton seems to fit right in with that group, though, doesn't he? Huh? Just like one big happy. All right, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. So, do we have a line? No, we don't have an open line. John is calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hey, John.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm a founding member of your thing. You were talking earlier about the firing of Peter Pace.
Yes.
It always concerns me when Bush gets rid of anybody because he seems to have a knack for finding somebody worse to replace them.
Isn't that the truth?
Like, for instance, Bolton and Negroponte were put in when he needed to take it down a notch. You were talking last night about the Sinclair Lewis book, It Can't Happen Here.
Yes.
And the Connolly book. I've read them both. I recommend you read the Sinclair Lewis book written in 1935.
Yeah, I've read that one, and you mean Joe Connison.
Connison, yeah.
Right.
But the Sinclair Lewis book is just so detailed and subtle, and the comparisons to the regime today are just so awesome. I think Connison doesn't pick up all the subtleties in his book, so I recommend the original.
Well, I've read the original. The point I was trying to make the other night was that I think the way Sinclair Lewis wrote the book makes it almost unreadable to me. Now, I realize that that was the style, the literary style of some writers back in the 30s, but it's just awful. It's just,
it's written
so
terribly.
Poorly written.
It's written terribly. I agree with you, but all of those little things, like the Svengali-type guy that manages the leader and the religious overtones of the thing. And
the plot,
amazing.
Sure, the plot and the characters, while they're just more or less cartoonishly drawn, you're right. The plot and the characters make for incredible reading and certainly have comparisons with this Bush crime family. I'm not arguing that point at all. It's just that it's so difficult to read, and I haven't read Joe Connison's book yet. But
well,
I do.
It's well worth the read too. I really enjoyed it.
Well, good. All right. Well, listen. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll talk
thank
again.
You.
All right. Take care, John. I'm sorry. Okay, who's up next here? I think Barry is calling from Southern Indiana. Hey, Barry, welcome to the program.
Good evening. Hey. I used to listen on Air America out of Cincinnati, but they couldn't stand it, so they did away with that station. So
yeah,
I listen to you on Sirius now.
Oh, you do? You get us on Sirius? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I guess the whole thing with me is that I'm really perplexed about what is going to happen next. My ancestors came over here from Scotland and Switzerland. Over there, they couldn't vote, they couldn't own property, they couldn't hold office, they couldn't do a lot of things. And it's like over here, we're ready to surrender all that in the name of security. You know, my ancestors must be twirling in their graves because they took great risks to get away from all that.
Yeah.
I mean, what's with us? Have we just thrown the Enlightenment out the window? You know, I'm a religious person, but I separate that from the political thing. Jefferson and those folks had the sense to separate it because it meant nothing but war. And now over here, it's practically like they want to anoint Bush and the archpresbyter is, you know, some fool preacher. I thought we got over here to get away from that stuff.
Well, we did, but and I think this is one of the reasons that the founders of the people who wrote the documents for this country made it very clear that they were offering us a chance, us being the descendants of those people. That's all, just a chance. And obviously, we've screwed it up. Barry, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in.
Yeah, we've blown it off.
We have. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
What? Oh, that's a Bushism. 21 past the hour. Let's talk with Edie, who's listening in Montgomery, Alabama. Edie, welcome to the program. I guess you were left on hold last night, right?
Yeah. Hi, Mike. You know, it's been over a year since we've spoken.
It has indeed.
It has. And I'm in Monkeytown, Alabama now. Yes. But
Where were you?
I was in Atlanta. That's right.
Good God, Edie.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm one of the lucky of the disabled uninsured. I got a good sister and a decent brother-in-law.
Well, I've got something for you tonight. You're not a founding member, are you?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Well, you're going to be right now. I'll tell you why. We were given a gift membership to give to one of our listeners by Nova M founding member Sabine. That's how she wants to be identified. She bought two memberships, one for herself, and she said, give one to someone else who maybe is, in a situation where they can't just do it right now. And I immediately thought of you, Edie, and I've been getting your emails. So, you're going to get a gift membership. You're going to be a founding member of Nova M. Starting when, Kathy? Open up your mic and talk to Edie for a second.
Hey, Edie, I think immediately, once this call's over, we'll put you back on hold, and our associate producer, Ian, will hook you up.
Thanks so much. Gee, I'm touched. Really, I am.
You have been, I mean, a lot of our listeners are loyal listeners and have hung with us for a long time. You have been, and I appreciate the stories you've told me in your emails. You've really shared an awful lot of stuff that has just been important to me. So
important to me to be able to share that with you, because I know that you're not judgmental, and you have an open heart, and I appreciate that.
Well, Sabine, who I don't know, but she was kind enough, and she's kind of your angel on this one. She's paid for your membership. She said, give it to someone that you think would really appreciate it. And I know there are hundreds of people who would appreciate it, but Edie, by God, it's going to go to you, okay?
Well, thanks. Well, if Sabine is listening, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, now just remember, when you and I are finished talking, don't hang up. We're going to put you on hold, and then Ian will talk with you off the air and get the information to you, okay?
All right.
All right, now, what'd you call in about?
Well, I was just thinking about how the days of King George, or, you know, him being worshipped and adored.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of the last election, I think they know that those days are over. And I got to thinking about how scary a rat in a corner is. And this new thing that he's written up for himself, where he gives himself all these extraordinary powers, in case of a flood or any other kind of emergency. I'm just worried about it, Mike. I'm worried about what's going to happen when the next election rolls around, and how these monsters will hate to let loose of power. You know, they've had it so long. They had it so good for so long.
Really?
Yeah.
Really.
But that's mainly just the comment I wanted to make. I'm so glad to talk to you again after all this time.
Yes, I'm glad, too. I didn't realize, because I get your emails, I didn't realize it had been a year since you have...
over a year, the end of last February of last year.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
All right. Well, don't be a stranger, okay?
And thank you so much.
And now stay on, don't hang up. We're going to put you on hold, and Ian's going to pick up and talk to you. And thanks to Sabine, who provided that membership for Edie. It was very kind of you to do that. Truly, truly, truly kind of you to do that. Where are we? We got time to we can start another call here. Jack is calling from San Diego. Hey, Jack.
Mike?
Yes.
Oh, you were talking about the Liberty.
Yes.
I thought you might find this interesting. The senior legal counsel to the Navy Court of Inquiry, Ward Boston Jr., he has written a column in the opinion section of today's San Diego Union Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
The title is Time for the Truth About the Liberty.
Right.
If you weren't aware of that, you might want to check that out. It's an eye-opener But I thought what I was going to talk to you about tonight is the current state of Israel, that our policy in the Middle East, part of our policy is to ensure that Israel remains the only nuclear power in the region. And, you know, Israel refuses to join the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And why any type of attack on Iran would be futile is because right now, as we speak, Egypt, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia are in the beginning stages of their own nuclear energy program.
I know. We're all going to be blown up. Jack, hold on. I've got a break here, and then we'll come back and finish the conversation. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NovAm Radio.
For me, in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House, to give you an assessment, first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
It's over, but tomorrow will be the same. I know that they're really not to blame if they weren't so blind. That truly they see is a much better way for them.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Jack in San Diego. So let's go back to Jack in San Diego. Where were we, Jack?
Well, I think we were talking about nuclear weapons.
Yes.
In Israel.
Yeah.
You know, for such a teeny little country with no oil, it certainly is the fly in the ointment. And I'm disappointed in our candidates for president, both for the Democrats and the Republicans, because all I hear from them when it comes to Iran, is that all options are on the table, with the exception of Revel and Kucinich. And of course, we know that's code for using tactical nukes on Iran. What I'd like to hear is that our foreign aid to Israel will be contingent on Israel joining the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and that the United States would like to see the Middle East become a nuclear weapons-free zone, and that Israel be willing to put its weapons on the table for destruction. The policy of having Israel remaining the only nuclear force in the Middle East is not going to last forever. And what Israel doesn't realize is that the first opportunity one of these other Middle East countries have, when at some point they obtain these weapons, it's only going to take two or three to completely destroy Israel. You know, if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. And I would like to see some type of a policy that we could at least make a model out of the Middle East that it could be free of these type of weapons.
Well, I agree with you. Certainly on the idea of non-proliferation, but I don't think there. Well, I don't think that's not the right statement. There has never been a country that has developed nuclear weapons and then destroyed them all and said, no, I don't think I want to be here. That's just not going to happen, whether it's Israel, Russia, United States, China, Pakistan. It doesn't make any difference. Once that genie is out of the bottle, it's never put back in. And there are lots of reasons for it, most of which are insane, because I think every single country knows, some of these stateless freaks don't know this, but every single nation state understands that the first use of nuclear weapons guarantees that there will be a nuclear holocaust that will probably end life on the planet as we know it. That was the theory behind mutually assured destruction that we in the Soviet Union based our foreign and domestic policies on for 50 or 60 years. As far as Israel, as you know, has never acknowledged that it owns nuclear weapons, and that's a strategic move on their part. The entire world knows that they probably have 200 or 300 nuclear weapons, some of them nuclear, some of them thermonuclear. So you know, live by the sword, die by the sword. You're right, but that applies to everybody. The U.S. involvement with Israel, as also I'm sure you know, is based in several things. First of all, the massive guilt about what we did to deny Jews who were fleeing the Nazi Holocaust. We denied them entry into this country over and over and over and over again during World War II. We were complicit in the execution of Jews in Europe because the American governments have all been basically anti-Semitic. We all know this. There's no reason to try to dance around it. There's no reason to try to hide from it. We have had administration after administration that was subtly anti-Semitic. We've had the Catholic religion that has been more than subtly anti-Semitic. Were I a Jew who helped establish the State of Israel, I probably would have been a member of the Stern Gang or Irgun, the two terrorist organizations that the early Jewish settlers belonged to, because it was settled by religious fanatics, the settlers, the original settlers who moved into Palestine and started, forcing the Palestinian people or the Arabic people to move. I'm sorry about Israel. It breaks my heart. It really, really, really breaks my heart what has happened to that little tiny country. Their foreign policy, even their domestic policy, especially their domestic policy, that utterly and absolutely practices exactly what Jimmy Carter said where it concerns Palestinians, and that is full-blown, clearly definable apartheid. So, the Jews in Israel, the Zionists in Israel, or whoever it is that's running the government, the Likud, they feel incredibly and totally justified in whatever their policies are. I might add that it's easy for you and me, sitting back here in the United States, to be extremely critical of Israeli policies, which I always am. But I think we need to think that one through. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and I could offer this. If you see, it appears that the United States and Israel are asking Iran to give up a lot, but we're not willing to give up anything. Now, I think Israel could take care of its security needs if it did give up its nuclear weapons, by becoming, for example, a full member of NATO.
Well, I don't know what to say.
I mean, we have to look for alternatives. That's why I was very interested in Dennis Kucinich. In one of the debates, he's the only one that mentioned that he would have a policy of trying to get rid of nuclear weapons worldwide. And I think we have to be talking about this.
Okay. All right. We'll do it. Jack, I got to go. Thanks.
All right, buddy.
I appreciate it. Take care. Quick break here. We'll be back.
It's in the Gulf Coast countries' interests that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Welcome back, about 14 before the hour. Thanks to the crew for tonight's program, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your phone calls at KPHX in Phoenix, Billy Foster, the moderator at the NovaMRadio.com chat room. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Catherine Bay, the executive producer. And go to NovaMRadio.com and sign up for the downloads and podcasts. Huh? We'd love to have you, especially in that chat room. It is kind of like rush hour in any major metropolitan area on Friday at 5:30 in the afternoon, but it's still fun. Let me just add something to Ron Martz, the guy whose article article today in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution concerning the attack on the Liberty. Our North Metro Atlanta correspondent, Sharon, who is connected to the military. That's the best way for me to put it. She writes, Ron Martz was in charge of a team of Atlanta Journal-Constitution writers and photographers who, quote, deployed, end quote, to Iran in 2005. With the 48th Brigade of the Georgia National Guard, Martz and his team came to the company where I work to speak about their experiences in Iraq and take questions from the audience. It was very interesting. The man who introduced Martz told a couple of stories about Ron's experiences in Iraq. One story was about Ron explaining to a general that he could not kick one of the AJC's reporters out of Iraq. And the other story, and I remember reading about this, Sharon, in the other story, Martz went out with some soldiers in an armed personnel carrier. At some point, he started hearing these sounds and realized it was bullets hitting the outside of the APC. Then he heard a thud and another thud. At that point, he realized the thuds were bullets penetrating the hull and hitting each of the soldiers next to him. He was between the two. The man telling this story said that Martz immediately began administering first aid to the soldiers. They both survived. When Martz finally got to the podium at our company to speak, I think he was a little embarrassed or humbled by the telling of the story. Anyway, Ron Martz spoke, and then some of the other reporters and photographers spoke, and they took some questions. Sharon, there's some more here, but it has nothing to do with what she wrote about. The only reason I include that is because I want you to know that Ron Martz, like I said, his politics are immaterial. He was a war correspondent for the AJC, and he did one hell of a job. And yes, I had forgotten that story. Thanks, Sharon, for reminding me that he was he wrote about that too. And I'm very happy to report, thanks to Sharon, that the two soldiers survived. Back to your phone calls. Jay is calling from Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jay. Hey, Jay.
Hi. I'm calling from Portland, Maine.
Oh, Portland, Maine.
Yeah, I called earlier this week. I'm glad I'm the tinfoil hat guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Great show. Edie's beautiful, by the way. I think she's absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not going to leave.
No, they're not.
And what do you think of Alex Jones?
I've been on this program a couple of times. He's very dedicated to what he does, what he believes in. I've been a guest on his program. He was very supportive of me when I was fired from Air America. And while his and my path certainly diverge at various points, they also cross at various points.
Yeah, because to be totally gut honest with you, when I first discovered him, I was like, well, he's half crazy.
But people think that of me too. Well, two thirds crazy.
I know. Yeah, I guess. But but I don't think so. But anyways, something I found that he did that I thought a video on YouTube, actually, that I just wanted to point out to you that I thought was really fascinating. He interviewed or some people would say accosted, but other people would say he just simply was doing what a journalist does. He spoke to David Gergen and brought up Bohemian Grove.
Right.
And I was absolutely flabbergasted because when I used to be a news addict, I watched David Gergen all the time on McNeil Lehrer.
Isn't Gergen a weird character? You know, forget Alex Jones or Mike Malloy as having a potential for weirdness. Isn't David Gergen weird?
Well, first of all, let's get something straight. I just want to get, I know about weird. You're not, to me, and I know, people think I'm weird, whatever, You're not. This should be mainstream. David Gergen, this is insane. What's going on?
I know.
And the thing is, what's unfortunate is to articulate this in a proper way, we sound like crazy people.
Well, that's the thing. Well, what did Alex do? Put together an interview and
this
it's
is
out?
Amazing. If you check it out, it's on YouTube, and I think Alex Jones puts all of his stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, please send me a link because you know YouTube.
Here's the thing. If you just go to YouTube and put Alex Jones.
Oh, okay.
And also Alex Jones, David Gergen, as a link, so it's all there. It blew me away because I'd been watching so much as a news junkie and all this crap, you know, and I stopped watching regular television, you know, around 9/11. I knew what was happening. I knew it was coming and I knew it was where we're heading for. And to see this, it's extraordinary. And my hope is that if we can just point people to certain things, they can make up their own mind, and that's where the action is going to come from, where people are going to do something, is that in their own minds, I mean, we can scream all day, you know, we can show our rage. I mean, this is why I love you so much, is because you, my girlfriend, my person who's most important in my life has always was listening to you one night and said, hey, that's you. And that's why I'm listening. And it's because what you express in terms of what liberalism is and what it means to be a liberal should be the mainstream of the Democratic Party. You've had some callers giving you crap and people talk about, you know, what the Democrats, oh, don't get down on the Democrats. Democrats are always eating themselves up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We need to express our anger. And need to express that we can be stronger. And the people in power, if they're not going to be stronger, Thomas Jefferson and all of the people that founded this country, men and women and of every faith, gave us something to change.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not at the point yet. I don't believe we're at the point yet where we have to be revolutionaries, where we have to live in the desert and our best friends are a bullet. We can change things, but we have to see what's going on, who the enemy is, and do something. And
well,
you do it every night, and that's I just I'm I, thank well, God
all,
you do
all,
it.
All I do is talk, but remember, I don't know.
But
who...
you inspire. Talk is it means something. And you know what's fascinating? I know you hate talking about theology. You have a lot of callers that come in. I think call you and try to convince you you're not an atheist. And it fascinates me because. They pick up on your spiritualism, they pick up on your love, and they pick up on your love. I mean, what your anger comes from injustice. I mean, the reason we're liberals is because we're sick.
Well, that's true. But Jay, you're talking a little bit too much about me, and I get very uncomfortable. No, that's okay. It just makes me a little uncomfortable.
Remember, service. That's all I want to say.
Okay,
let me say that.
Well, remember this, and somebody sent me this, and a couple of people have sent it to me. I don't know who the original quote comes from. It really doesn't matter. But here's what it is: there are four boxes for use in the defense of liberty: soap, ballot, jury, ammo. Use in that order.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that while that is a bracing quote, it's also scary as hell because it means that when the first three no longer work, then the fourth one is absolutely required in the defense of liberty. And I would hate to think that the fourth box is going to have to be used in this country now or 5 years from now.
Well, I don't think it has to because here's the thing. I see myself as an optimistic misanthrope.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
Well, I'm making up my own stuff as I go along.
Well, that's good. No, I like that. I like it.
I think let's encourage everybody to make it up as they go along. And that the thing is that so much stuff has been imposed upon. When you're born into a world that has a lot of pain and a lot of hate in it. And maybe in your own family or in the history of the world, there's at some point that every individual can make a choice. And I think that if we, like we're doing now, as a communicating, inspiring people, like Edie, it's like that's the truth. These people don't want to leave. They're fascists. And if more people understand this and we all connect on this level, we can do stuff. I worked for a political candidate that I was not really happy with, but I just did not want to see a Republican win in my state. And I may be doing that again. And I remember W.C. Fields said something like, it's not who I'm for, it's who I'm against.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So it's like everyone should be active. And that's what, and the more, and I think you, Air America, when it first started, when you were on it,
yeah,
got me there.
Yeah.
I followed you. I'm on Sirius now listening to you.
Yeah.
People are there. Let's do so, everybody can do something.
I hear
help.
You. Jay, it's time to say goodnight. Hey, listen,
thank you
thanks
so much.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Have a good weekend. We'll talk again. Ah, don't forget Sunday night, The Sopranos. And it's the last one forever. Oh, no. Oh, no. We may miss Monday. I don't know. Take care. Have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. And have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.